RCR with Paul Brennan, Reality Check Radio.
So we heard the news yesterday late afternoon, convicted and discharged was the verdict relating to Eliana Rubashkin, the case that came out of the assault in Albert Park, well over a year ago now, against Posey Parker, the source. And following that case all the way through from the day, actually, that it happened, because he was filming there, all the way through the court appearances, talking with all sorts of people. Most recently yesterday, I was watching some of Simon's material. Citizen photojournalist Simon Anderson is with us to talk about the case and the verdict. Simon, nice to have you on RCR.
Good morning, Mr. Brennan. Thank you for having me on your show.
Okay, so first of all, let's go back to that day. You were there and you took some quite amazing footage at the time. Remembering back to that time now, and we'll get to what happened yesterday. How does it all feel over that period of time, looking back there now to where we are now?
Well, for me, it was personally quite life changing to be it was a surreal experience. Is the headline sort of going from being just an anonymous Joe Blow to suddenly being the person that filmed some footage that more than 100 million people have seen around the world.
Wow, 100 million, gee.
Yes, and one form or another. It's been absolutely everywhere. It's been on major television channels around the world, and it's been remixed into other content because I think the Kiwis may not realize just how momentous that footage was and how embarrassed as a country we were by it.
Yeah, well, I certainly realized that. Were you watching that footage in real time as it was coming down? It was from a drone, wasn't it?
It wasn't actually. It's a 360 camera on a selfie stick.
Ah, right.
So it was about 2.5-3 meters above my head. So I was actually in amongst the thick of the rush of the mob as it was occurring. So what I was seeing versus what the camera was seeing were quite different. It was from a different angle.
So when you played it back, what was that like?
Well, it was a new camera, Mr. Brennan, and I didn't really know how to edit footage out of it. And it took me about 18 to 24 hours to learn how. And in the meantime, this completely false narrative was being promulgated by the vestigial mainstream media and by the predominantly left-wing politicians who participated, telling a story of rainbow love and peace and happiness. And the footage that I had directly contradicted that narrative. So when I started publishing footage after they had that sort of 18 to 24 hour period to kind of set the narrative, all hell broke loose.
And you mentioned the mob. So I know it was a mob. I saw the pictures, but did it feel like a mob being there surrounded by it?
Well, yes. I mean, there was a great deal of sort of low level violence in my immediate vicinity. So around me, with the jostling and the pushing and the shoving and things like that was going on, that was kind of low level. There were a little bits and pieces of significantly more severe violence that I personally witnessed. But then from the overhead, that captured a whole lot more of it.
Yeah. Okay, and then I guess there were a whole lot of things that happened that day, but the one that really stood out, obviously, was the juicing, is that the word? The juicing of Posey Parker by Eli Rubashkin. And you saw that happen?
Yeah, so that occurred about 3 or 4 meters in front of me. So I had a very, very clear view of that happening, and it certainly did spur the crowd on to further violence from what I saw. And I should also make the point that the other person who was assaulted in that juicing incident, and I think that's a very good term, Mr. Brennan, was Tanya Sturt, the organizer of the event.
Right.
And she was in court today to see justice served.
Yeah. Okay, so you've been following the case. What are some of the memories you've had of the time between the incident and now that stand out for you?
Well, I think the first thing is that Mr. Rubashkin himself has been thoroughly lionized around the world. by his fellow comrades within left-wing circles and within the majority section of the rainbow community. And he dined out on it a lot. He did interviews with a variety of different podcasts and media celebrating what he had done. And it was certainly the case that today's judge kept that in mind. The other thing that really stood out to me is that he pleaded innocent for a very long time. And the judge made a point of this as well, that for a good 12-month period, he was maintaining his innocence and that he would be defending the charge, and only changed to a guilty plea very late in the piece. So I think that the story has evolved over time, always to capitalize what is best for Mr. Rabashkin, moment by moment.
Yeah, I guess we'll say he was elevated to some kind of hero status in that community, right? Like a real heroic act. It was seen as that anyway.
I certainly right. And you may recall that that his friend and comrade, Chloe Swarbrook, was on national television a day or two later defending his actions and justifying them. Some might even go so far as to say that she was rather celebratory in her response to that. And that was very reflective of how many people felt. I think that what people don't realize is that for large sections of the rainbow community and the left, they were celebrating Albert Park as a significant political victory for their movement, up until it suddenly occurred to them, hang on a second here, there is video footage emerging from people like me and other independent photographers, which doesn't paint us in a particularly flattering light.
Did we see any walking back by them? Because not only that, and I think you mentioned it before, they embarrassed us in front of the world. Big time.
Oh, they have.
A lot of people work hard to maintain an image for New Zealand and have a lot invested in it. And here they are blowing it up.
Oh, yes, absolutely. That is certainly the case. And I've had conversations with people inside Tourism New Zealand who have reflected that we were embarrassed internationally, and it has had an impact. In answer to your question, no. And that was a question that I posed to Tanya Sturt with the interview I conducted with her after the hearing today, which I published to social media about half an hour ago. I asked her directly if Chris Hipkins and Chloe Swarbrook had ever reached out to her to apologize for the violence that their activists perpetrated against her and against other women in the park, or apologized for their justifications for their activist violence subsequently. And she told me that they haven't. So no, in terms of walking it back, they just haven't done that. I don't think, to a large degree, they're really embarrassed about it, and I don't think they feel that they did anything wrong.
That's concerning, isn't it? Because that's not knowing right from wrong.
Well, it is, and I think it's distressing for a liberal democracy where people don't feel that they can express a political opinion without facing the very real risk of violence. And I think it's wonderful that the New Zealand judiciary in this instance took a similar view and repudiated political violence as it was enacted that day.
Why do you think there was a change in plea, or there was a pleading of guilty? I think, was it back in June? There was obviously a change of thinking by him and legal support to decide, well, okay, we're going to have to plead guilty here. The game's kind of up. We've had our moment in the sun. Reality's hit. Is that what happened, do you think?
Yes, and well, the judge directly said that to his lawyer, saying, well, hang on a second, there's video footage of the crime being committed, and Rabashkin has admitted it and so on subsequently. What possible argument could you make for an offence here? It seems to be effectively prima facie. And I think that probably convinced his defence that it was time to minimise the consequences. And that was probably a fair decision, in that the judge did take into account that guilty plea and gave him a 15% discount for it.
Okay. The Herald reporting that the lawyer, James Olsen, had asked the judge grant his client a discharge without conviction, saying, Here's the thing I want to get your comment on. The overall gravity of her offending was low and that she had been attempting to stop Parker from sharing her anti-trans views. Now, how can the overall gravity be low if no one knew what was in that liquid? Because there have been many cases overseas where acid has been poured over people and disfigured and injured them for life. It's not a light thing, is it? You don't know what you're getting hit with. And to put someone in that position is violence.
Oh, it certainly is. And this came through in the witness statements, Mr. Brennan, where Ms. Sturt made the point that in the first instance that she thought she had been hit by acid. In the second instance, she thought that she might have been exposed to disease because the fluid could have been bodily fluids.
Mm.
And the judge also took that into account. So it was a significant impact upon the two ladies who were assaulted, Tanya Sturt and Mrs. Keen Minshall. But then there's the broader context of what is, as the judge said, premeditated political violence and the effect that that has upon society in general. So I think Mr. Olson's argument was spacious, to say the least, and I think the judge seemed to take a similar view.
Going back, you were there, Simon. What was the police response to that specific incident?
The
juicing. What do they do?
Well, they weren't there, and
they weren't there.
They weren't. There wasn't a police person within 100 meters of that happening, and this is the crux of the Independent Police Complaints Authority investigation into police actions that day. For your listeners who are interested, I have published the witness interview that I gave to the IPCA. It is on my YouTube channel for those interested of my perception on the day. But the simple fact of the matter is that the police completely removed themselves from the park and let the rainbow community get absolutely stuck into the women that were there. And anyone who says anything different only needs to look at the video footage for proof of what I'm saying to be true.
And over the period of time, what was the demeanor of Rabashkin that you have observed through all of this?
I would say that he is prideful and entirely unconcerned. I think that it may have been the case that those around him have convinced him that there are serious consequences. But I don't believe that he is at all remorseful, other than for the impact upon him personally. And the judge made a point of that in his affidavit that he submitted to the court, he provided a lot of justifications, but didn't actually ever apologize. And she made the point, look, you know, you're sorry for the impact upon you, upon your career, the potential to travel, and some of the pushback that you've had from the community. But she did not believe that he was actually at all remorseful for what he had done to his victims.
Sounds narcissistic to me.
Well, yes, I wouldn't want to diagnose him. I'm not a professional, but certainly it was not behavior one would expect. I think a person facing significant charges like that, I would expect a reasonable person to treat the matter with some seriousness and perhaps as an opportunity for some self-reflection to sort of think, well, you know, maybe running around assaulting people because they disagree with me isn't something I should be doing.
Yeah, convicted and discharged. So that's the end of the matter. There's a conviction on the record, but now discharged. No further punishment, I guess.
Yes, and I think that that in the context of the New Zealand judicial system, that is probably as much as we could expect. And I would also say that, you know, the police have gone absolutely out of their way to not prosecute offenders who assaulted people in Albert Park. There have been numerous people who did bad things that the police have not pursued for them. And in the case of Rabashkin, he was charged with the least possible offence, which was the summary offence of common assault, and two charges of it. And there are more significant offences that he could have been charged with. For instance, male assaults female, and the fact that I think that I'm not a lawyer, so I don't know, but because it was premeditated political violence, I think that, you know, then perhaps there could have been a charge under, for instance, the Terrorism Act as an incidence of domestic terrorism.
Yeah. Feels like two-tier policing, Simon.
Yes, I would say so. And I also think that this conviction to a large degree embarrasses many people inside the establishment. I think the senior police have questions to answer. And I also think the Labour and Green Party MPs who participated in that mob, you know, they have some apologies to make and some questions to answer on the conversations that they may or may not have had with senior police leadership leading up in the days before Albert Park.
Simon Anderson, thank you for coming on RCR and telling us about that right from woe to end, citizen photojournalist. And if people want to go and look at that footage, Simon, and follow up on some of the things that you have published relating to this case, you mentioned a YouTube channel. Where else can they go?
The best place to find me is Substack. That's simonranderson.substack.com. Everything I publish goes there first. It is completely free. And if you subscribe, you get a notification when I release new material.
Thank you, Simon, for coming on RCR. Appreciate it.
A pleasure. Thank you very much, Mr. Brennan.
The RCR shop has great gift ideas, from great-looking tees, hoodies, caps, tote bags, bumper stickers, and more. The RCR shop is now open at www.realitycheck.radio/shop.